In the past 50 or 60 years, with the possible exception of Harold Kushner's book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People, by far the best-selling book written by a rabbi anywhere in the world was written by a rabbi named Joshua Loew Liebman, and it was called Peace of Mind, in which he says that for all the qualities that human beings might have, the most important by far is that they have peace of mind. That they have what we might think of as an Eastern or a Buddhist ideal of a certain calm and acceptance that allows you to face the difficulties of life without being ruffled, because everything is fine. There should be no dissatisfaction, no unease. You have reached that level of human felicity known as peace of mind. I'm here this morning to argue against peace of mind. I'm here to cultivate unhappiness and to promote dissatisfaction. And if I complete the sermon and you are a little bit less happy than when I began, I will consider myself happy. You know, sometimes when I interview the bar or bat mitzvah, one of the questions that I ask them is, what would you like to improve about yourself? If you could change anything, anything at all, wave a magic wand and be different, what would you like to change? And every now and then, the child will say, you know, I can't really think of anything. Now, granted that it is nervous-making to be in the rabbi's office in front of your parents and be asked questions, I still don't let any child off the hook with, I can't think of anything. Because I know, had you asked me as a child, what would you like to improve about yourself? I had a list ready. And if I had mislaid the list, my parents would have been happy to supply me with another copy. Because they were not at all bashful. In a very gentle and kind way about letting me know in what areas I could improve. And that's because they didn't want me to be satisfied with myself. And they're right. And I'm not talking about the areas that we normally think of. I'm not talking about getting better grades or getting a better job. I'm talking morally. That we should be morally dissatisfied with whom we are. Abraham Joshua Heschel, who was, after all, a moral leader, a deeply religious man in all the best senses of that word, was once told by somebody, you know, I don't really have to go to synagogue because I give charity, I do good things, I'm really a good person. And Heschel said, I envy you. Because me, I'm always thinking and doing things that I know I shouldn't think and I shouldn't do. I know that I don't give as much tzedakah as I ought to give. I know that I don't treat people as nicely as I should treat them. All I can say is hats off to you that you do all those things. Now, what's the difference between the two of them? The difference is that Heschel had a fine-tuned sense of the way his soul should be. In the same way that you or I can go to a concert and listen to a musician and think, boy, that was wonderful, but you ask the musician and he'll say, oh, it was terrible. Because he listens with a professional ear. And the more practiced you are, the more dissatisfied you become. The more you focus on your moral life, the less good it seems to you. Because you are aware of the flaws in your performance. Rabbi Abraham Twersky, said that when he was a child and he did something wrong, his parents wouldn't say to him, "What, you're bad." And they wouldn't say, "What you did was bad." They would say, "What you did was not worthy of you." In other words, you have the capacity to be better, but you didn't do it this time. Therefore, you should be dissatisfied. I remember years ago watching a movie, and I will get some of the details wrong because I haven't seen it in years, but it was starring Albert Brooks, and it was called Defending Your Life. And it was all about whether he would get into heaven. And those of you who see the movie, who have seen the movie, may remember that he gets into heaven because he finally breaks through the wall of his shyness and distance and admits to his love. And I thought, that's what it takes. There was no moral action, there was no goodness, there was no measure of being kind, giving. You just have to not be shy. And then everything is fine. And I thought, where is the moral dissatisfaction in this movie? Where is the realization that every single day, on purpose and inadvertently, we slight each other and hurt each other? We handle each other's hearts roughly. We speak words that we ought not to have spoken. Where's the moral dissatisfaction? Inside of ourselves. The idea of peace and calm, it's just not where we should be. When Jacob, in our parsha, lies down on the ground and has this wonderful vision of the angels descending and ascending the ladder, the Sfat Emet notices that when he gets up, he says, "Achein yesh Adonai b'makom hazeh v'anochi lo yadati." There's a God in this place, and I didn't know it. And the Sfat Emet says, what's wonderful about that is if you or I got up, we'd say, "Wow, God appeared to me." But Jacob doesn't assume it's about him. Jacob assumes it's about the place, because he doesn't think that he deserves God appearing to him. So he gets up and says, obviously this is a remarkable place, and yet we know, had Jacob put his head down somewhere else, the same thing would have happened. That's why I thought about calling this sermon Against Self-Esteem. Because it's overdone. Self-esteem should be based at least in part on what you actually do. And morally, self-esteem is hard to earn. It takes kindness and goodness and consideration and work. The only personality characteristic that we are told about Moshe, the only one, is that he was humble. In other words, he didn't think he was good enough. Remember, when God comes to him, what does he say? "I'm not good enough." When God comes to Isaiah, what does Isaiah say? "I'm not good enough." When God comes to Jeremiah, what does Jeremiah say? "I'm not good enough." And yet, from the moment we are children, we are taught to present ourselves in school, in jobs, on dates, in the mirror, as though, "I'm wonderful." There should be a core of dissatisfaction that should be in us, and we should teach to our children. Not that they aren't wonderful, which of course they are, but they don't always act wonderful. And when they don't, they need to hear it. And so do we. I don't think that even though there are sources, and there certainly are in the Jewish tradition, that talk about shalvat ruach, calmness of spirit, and sipuk nefesh, satisfaction of soul, that those things are occasionally important to find, I don't think that the dominant Jewish mode of being is one of peace of mind and calm satisfaction. And I don't think it should be. When you have a sense of God in this world and what God wants, you cannot help but look at yourself and others and know we have a long way to go. And that's why I think when Jacob has that dream and sees those angels and gets up from that place, he gives it a new name. He calls it Beit El, House of God, which, according to one commentary, is the first time that anybody in the Bible acknowledges that God begins in one's home. You want a sense of God and a sense of the moral demands on human beings? It doesn't begin in the synagogue. It doesn't begin in the school. It begins in one's home. It takes more work to tell your children what they have done wrong. Because if you approve, the discussion is over. There's no fight, there's no struggle, there's no difficulty, there are just smiles all around. But if you do that, you raise children who are morally self-satisfied without being morally good. And that is a danger for them and for the world. So this morning, I hope we can all recommit ourselves to the virtues of dissatisfaction and promise that in the coming week, we and everyone we know will be just a little less happy. Shabbat Shalom.